Shalom. This is Richard Address, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to today's installment of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. These shows represent our desire to explore issues and events that help shape and comment on the current revolution in longevity and how that revolution is impacting our families, ourselves, and our Jewish world at large. Today's show is a pre-recorded show. We recorded this at the Union for Reform Judaism's biennial convention in Boston. The date of this recording was Friday, December the 8th, as part of the URJ's series of workshops and forums examining longevity and the impact of the baby boomers on our congregations. So we invite you to listen to this series of guests, people who are working on a variety of different proposals and programs for the reform movement, each exploring aspects of certain types of impact of longevity, from the Baby Boomer Forum to a program that is in operation at one of our synagogues to another very, very unique program in Los Angeles, and then a discussion on some of the psycho-spiritual aspects of what it means to age here in the beginning of the 21st century within our movement. This Jewish Sacred Aging Radio segment recorded at the URJ Biennial in Boston in December of 2017.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. We are recording. This is a podcast for the Union for Reform Judaism. It will be replayed when we get the tape on our radio show, Jewish Sacred Aging Radio, which I host. It's a weekly internet radio show that you can get on blogtalkradio.com/Jewish Sacred Aging. And then we archive all these shows as podcasts on our website, jewishsacredaging.com. So this show eventually will wind up on jewishsacredaging.com. Now, the focus of this podcast is to really present a series of not only opinions, but viewpoints on this tremendous revolution that's taking place within the American Jewish community dealing with baby boomers and longevity. The statistics are overwhelming. About 25% of the contemporary American Jewish community is over 65. And the Pew study that was released in July of 2016 indicated that the median age of the American Jewish community is 50 years of age. We began looking at these demographics and aging in the old Department of Jewish Family Concerns when we had departments, and that emerged into what is now a full-time job with Jewish Sacred Aging. We consult with congregations all over North America and really through the World Union in how to deal with these concerns, everything from caregiving to decision-making at the end of life to the economics of aging and the explosion of new creative rituals. Part of that is really working with congregations. That's what I do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, working with congregations. The Union for Reform Judaism has evolved and emerged over these last decade, about the last decade, really working, beginning now to focus and working with congregations. I will tell you that when we first did our first workshop on baby boomers at a San Diego biennial many, many years ago, the room held about 50 people. Now, there is a full-day forum, and this thing has evolved over the last decade or so into really the URJ institutionally becoming more aware of this. We're going to have four guests on this podcast. We're going to walk through a variety of different issues, from the psychosocial to a major program to the communities of practice focus and a look at what Sunday's program is going to be on the forum and another practical program that is in existence here through the Union of Reform Judaism at Rosh Hashanah in beautiful Center City, Philadelphia. So without further ado, Let me introduce to you our first two guests here on our podcast for today. Julie Lampert is the manager. You see this in your program, the Baby Boom and Engagement Community, and the Community of Practice here for the URJ. This community of practices we're going to learn a lot more about. And to my immediate right, Catherine Fisher, the Director of Congregational Advancement at Congregation Road of Shalom in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and a former congregant. So welcome, and we thank you for your attendance here in the room. Julie, let me begin with you. Talk to us a little bit about It's On. Talk to me a little bit about what this community of practice is, and specifically, how this community of practice with engagement of baby boomers emerged. What do you hope to do with this?
So the community of practice began about 18 months ago. We had around 18 congregations inquire about joining our community of practice. We have 12 active at this point. The URJ, based on the data that you shared before and what we know, recognize that we have a lot of congregations who are having a lot of questions around engaging their baby boomer constituency. So what we do is we create strategic networks around shared challenges and opportunities, and in this case, the baby boomers. When I joined the team 2 years ago and was charged with launching this community of practice, I knew that I had expertise in strategic visioning and design of learning and facilitating a process and exploration, but the content area around sort of what we know about baby boomers needed to have some partners, which is why we reached out to Richie Address and Laura Geller and Stuart Himmelfarben and recreated just a large pool of resources to help guide our 12 congregations as they explore the issues and challenges and opportunities. I like to tell people, this isn't about a problem, this is about an opportunity, and we need to shift the mindset of that. In the work of the strengthening congregations priority area of the URJ, we're very focused on the strength of collaboration and networking our congregations. So this process and this program began with bringing our 12 congregations together in Chicago to do some deep learning around the area of baby boomer engagement, what we know from the Jewish community, what we know from the market, what we know from the social sector, and everybody thinking about what small experiment, which is another part of the work that we do in strengthening congregations. It's about how do we test things out? How do we explore and experiment around certain areas of congregational engagement and strength, and in this area, the baby boomers. I think one of the main things we've learned through this process, and Catherine can speak to this, but I hear this because all of our congregations in the community of practice get an hour of coaching a month where we really just really focus on what their challenges are, reflect on the things they've tried, think about the next steps. We also network them together on shared opportunities online to problem solve together and share and learn from each other. But I think one of the major learnings and best principles that would come out of this work so far, and I'd love to hear what Catherine has to say about this, is that we segment our congregations. We have a mindset that we have these segmented ages in our congregations, and the needs are specifically based on those segments. And the baby boomer stage of life is new. This is the baby boomers as a population and an age cohort is experiencing this age differently than perhaps, well, than we know did before. My mother at her age, which is baby boomer age, is having a very different life experience than my grandmother did at her stage because of health, because of opportunity, because of the world we're living in, all those reasons. And as a Floridian, now I can tell you that, you know, not everyone moves to Florida to retire and wait. They may move because they want better weather, but they have a lot of living and a lot of engagement. And we need to be, our congregations need to strategically be thinking about that. We, in our COP, not only did our congregations explore their own challenges, we did a data analysis. We had a survey out around the sort of data in their congregation so they could learn about what the real situation was in their congregation. But we've been bringing through a lot of resources and programs out there that are aiming to engage our congregations and thinking of the kinds of supports and opportunities, programs, services and mindsets. I mean, we've done a webinar with Sacred Aging, and Richie helped us think about taking an environmental scan of how we think about this cohort. Rob Weinberg did something about experimenting and analyzing our experiments. So we're looking at this as it might be that we're focusing on baby boomers, but the skills and capacities we're building in our congregations also just strengthen our congregations in general.
So that's the overview. So I want to ask Catherine, if you could now, we've heard sort of like the view from 30,000 feet. You're in charge of, you were tasked to really bring this back to Rosh Hashanah in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. That's your area of expertise. Talk to us a little bit about how you brought this now into a congregation with the realities of dealing with, you know, just the congregational life and surveying and what you've done so far.
Okay. So when we entered into the community of practice, we had a fairly vibrant baby boomer group. On paper, we had a very active group, and our chair is sitting in this room, Linda Karp-Rudow, so I have to acknowledge her. But this baby boomer group had existed for 10 years, and it was, when they would have an event, there would be 50 people there, so on paper it looked great, and why were we there at the community practice? It was great in a lot of ways, but we have a very large baby boomer population at Rosh Hashanah. We have about 500 people at RS that are technically baby boomers. And so we weren't engaging a lot, hundreds of them. And so we weren't satisfied. I think we were still feeling like there are a lot of people we still need to engage. So we felt that there was a lot to learn, and so we applied, and we were in it, and it was incredible. We have expanded our thinking. It's gave us, going to the community of practice in Chicago gave us time to reflect on what we do and think more deeply about what we wanted to do. We heard about the wise aging class and the communities that Rabbi Geller is working on, and so we have started to partner with organizations in Philadelphia to think about how we can reach out to people in their homes and be relevant to people in their homes. The Wise Aging class we're going to be starting in the spring. So at any rate, what it helped us to do is come back, and we instituted a listening campaign where we had invited baby boomers in the community who we had not seen at baby boomer events or had not really seen very active in the community to connect with them to hear what matters in their life, basically.
So Julie mentioned this, one of the long-term goals, it was to de-silo. Have you begun to find this in your program as you've rolled this out at Rosh Hashanah in Philadelphia? Has there been opportunities for the de-siloization of age groups and a more integrated approach to programming and stuff like that?
So actually, it's interesting because we're a large congregation. So we have these connection groups, which are affinity groups based on age and stage of life. And they serve a very important purpose because people at different ages and stages of life do have different what we call nodal moments. And we want to make sure that we're providing intimate, small group opportunities for these different ages and stages of life groups to come together and to reflect and have, as Rabbi Adress had just done with us, provide Jewish context on this particular time in their life. So there is a real purpose and vision around our connection groups, but there are ways in which we are expanding, especially in boomers. The most concrete example of this is that we have actually a number of affinity groups that are working on our 50-plus age group. And when we started this work 10 years ago, baby boomers aged 40 to 60. Now they're 50 to 70, right? They don't stay the same. They get older. So what we have started...
That's what I heard.
It's true. So we.
Although my knees and legs are telling me differently.
So we have started to blend our 50-plus, all of our affinity groups that are focused on 50-plus are now collaborating and starting to think about how can we support one another. We're a very diverse community. We have a lot of single people over the age of 50. We have a strong LGBTQ community who also have a lot of ways that they experience life over 50. And we're bringing all these groups together to better understand how this next phase of life is what are they confronted with? How can we collaborate and provide meaning and community around people's lives? So, yes, we're a part of this bigger community. We come together at various times as a whole community. But I think that the needs and interests of the 50-plus group is really interesting, and it's a real opportunity for us.
I have to ask you a question. As the program has evolved, have you noticed more of this cohort becoming involved with general congregational programming, or, as many of my colleagues would say, are more of them coming to services on Friday night and Shabbos, or is it just, you know, these programs, but they don't set foot into shul on Shabbos?
So, I mean, my thinking on this is that the boomers really want to come to services. In our listening campaign, what we heard were a number of things about what they were interested in. Education is very high up on the list, and also spiritual meaning.
Right.
Time for reflection. You know, one of the things I remember vividly is they said, you know, we love coming to services, we need more time for reflection.
Well, so, one of the reasons, and I would be remiss, because in the audience here, and we're going to hear from Rabbi Geller in a minute, but Linda Thal, wave your hand, Linda, from the Wise Aging Movement, is also part of this growing, very nice wave of awareness based upon exactly what I think you're talking about, this need not only for connection, but as all the literature is showing, this search for or seeking for meaning. Julie, could you, now, here at the biennial, at the URJ Biennial, and this is where we're doing this podcast, Sunday, you've created an entire day specifically focused on these. Why don't you, in the interest of time, walk us through what that forum is going to be like?
So Sunday we're having the Baby Boomer Symposium from 11 to 3, and this is came right out of our community of practice gathering in Chicago. We're at the end of the 3 days together. The participant said, what are we going to do with the biennial to kind of celebrate what we've done and share what we've done? And we said, well, I don't know, we should talk about that. And out of it came this idea of doing a program on Sunday. We presented the idea, and we were really hoping to get together, for those of us that were doing this work, and maybe a few people would be interested in hearing what we were doing, 50 people. We thought that would be fantastic. We have 200 people registered for the symposium on Sunday, where we will be hearing from Mark Friedman, who's the CEO of Encore.org, which is an incredible resource and organization around baby boomers as a next stage of life, that it's an encore stage of life. It's not a waiting time, and has done tremendous work in intergenerational work and second career, all kinds of things. So he's our keynote. Then we've invited our COP participants are going to share the work that they've been doing, and for congregations to hear the work that they've been doing. And we're also going to have facilitated conversations with many experts out there from all over the country who are coming in to do some workshops, so that people who are attending can hear about what opportunities are out there, not only programmatic opportunities, but to hear from congregations around how they've mobilized, how they've strategized, how they've created systems and committees and task forces and prioritized this work, and how they're looking at their data and all those things it takes to make the change in their congregation. What are things to look for? What are the lessons learned? And really just sharing out. So we're and also hearing from Amy Asen, the vice president of the URJ on strengthening congregations, about what's next. Because clearly what's next is exciting. And also at the biennial, we've had several workshops on the baby boomers. We had 200 people at a workshop yesterday in a room. We thought we would maybe get 70 people. It was packed to the rim. So clearly we're onto something, and really excited about what's going to come out of Sunday, and thrilled to have the response that we've had. So
let me ask both of you, before we run out of time in this particular segment, you've crunched the numbers, Mark, and I'm sure Stuart will talk a little bit about the analytics of aging and the analytics of the boomers and the statistics, all of which are publicly available. But putting on my rabbi kippah, all that's wonderful. What have you found in your work about the soul and the deep yearning that you alluded to? Where is the soul in how you're evolving this? The soul of me looking at age 68 or 70 and knowing that time and health, the two things that no matter how many times you go to shul and how long you work out in the morning, you can run on that treadmill for 25 hours a day. But we know that time and health we cannot control. That's why the Unetane Tokef is the prayer for the holidays. What have you learned about the soul in the work that you're doing so far? This is not an easy question. I understand that.
I mean, I think that came up in the listening campaign in terms of people really yearning for that time of reflection, that time of Rabbi Address came to our synagogue, and one of the things that came out is that the boomers do want to go to Friday night services, and they want to better understand how to access meaning for them at Friday night services. So Rabbi Address came and taught a class, a five-session class, looking at specific prayers through the lens of a baby boomer, so that they could better access the deeper meaning behind prayer on Friday night services. So I think what they're looking for are a structure for bringing meaning into their lives, but also a way that they can participate. They don't want to sit there passively. They are very much a group that want to participate and have much to offer. This is a vibrant group of people, assuming they have their health. They are a vibrant group of people who have much to offer. And I think that, you know, if we're looking at the resources, that's how they bring meaning mm-hmm. into their lives.
Truly, what are you, as the coordinator of the COP for the baby moves, what do you see as the next step institutionally? I mean, we're in a room filled with URJ congregational leaders. Many of them want to take something back home. Mm-hmm. What do you see as the next steps?
Well, there's a few things in discussion. I think, you know, after this biennial, there's going to be a lot of talk and reflection to have on the response to this particular theme has had. We're all blown away and excited by mm-hmm. the fervor of it. I think we've talked about continuing with the COP and extending. We've opened it up and making it into an active learning network. We're talking about is it time to launch another COP around this? Is there time to launch a second COP and a second phase of people who've already done this? We have congregations that are very much doing this work who aren't in the COP.
Correct.
So
correct.
It's not like these are the only 12 congregations in the we know that. So there's lots of learning to do out there. How do we mobilize each other's expertise? And I think one of the things that responds to your last question around the sanctity and the sacredness and the kedushah of this work is at any given moment, the most vibrant 60-year-old can be the most dependent 60-year-old, the most vibrant 80-year-old, you know, and we need to be remembering that this work is sacred, and the pursuits of this work are sacred community. They're not just programmatic, it's sacred community. How do we shift the mindset of our leadership to be thinking about it's not only the programs we're going to offer, but the way we approach things. And I think we've got a lot to think about in terms of how do we mobilize that in the congregation.
What's the greatest gifts that this cohort that you're working with, what are the greatest gifts that you're too young, that we can give back to the congregation? What are the greatest gifts that the boomers can return to their congregation?
There are a lot. So they're often the leadership in our congregations. If you look around our boardrooms, probably most of them are boomers. There's a lot of wisdom and talent and skills and resources. So, I mean, you could take any one of those and take it in a million directions. There's a lot of intergenerational opportunities that we haven't really explored fully. I think it's, you know, it's what's so exciting to me is I love creating things that haven't been created. So we're looking at this stage of life in a way that we've never looked at it before.
Correct.
I what I said before about looking at 50 plus, I think is the future also. I don't think we're looking at a 20-year time span. I think we're looking at 50-plus. And we really can look at aging in a fuller way, and I think we need to bring our 72-pluses into our boomer conversation. The wise aging class, I think, will resonate for a lot of people in their 70s and 80s, 90s. And I don't think we want to segment as much. I think we want to start blending. We noticed in our baby boomer offerings that a lot of older congregants are coming to them and finding that that's meaningful to them. So I'm thinking that's one of it.
Yeah, go ahead, Julie.
One of the things that I find interesting, and maybe it's because I'm not a millennial and I'm not a boomer, I'm in the middle, is that one of the things I think this generation really can teach those of us below you and all of that, that it is the commitment to the institution and the organized Jewish community, that there are so many great lessons and messages and how we do that in generation, the younger mm-hmm. generations around community belonging. And you know, one of the assumptions that our congregations make, which is, I think, becoming a little bit of resented, is you just assume we're going to be there because we've always been there and we're not going to always be there.
No, no, no.
That's not the right assumption anymore. So we have to work at that. But that sense of we as Jews belong to community, we have an obligation to community, I think that is an important message that can't get lost with this generation's experience. Even though it's changing, I just think there's a great opportunity for that intergenerational coming together of shared vision and shared commitment and all.
Oh no, the what we call in the proto Jewish sacred aging, the theology of relationships.
Exactly.
As we get older and we understand that the most powerful thing we have are relationships, and as we get a little older and we understand also from living that those circles of relationships, as we get a little older, slowly, slowly start to diminish. That scares the out of us at a very root primal level. And one of the things that came up in the Rota Sholem class was when we talked about worship, which is another subject that, as you know, most congregations do not want to talk about. The people who say we are now going to services more were there not because they were praying to some God. They were there because of community. Mm-hmm. And we learned this. For those of you who are on boards in this room, please remember that all this, and I speak from working for the union for 30-some years and congregations, and my former president is sitting in this audience, that a lot of this is really a membership retention issue, because boomers are leaving. And this is an attempt, and a very valid attempt, and it works, to say we need to meet you where you're living and in the passion that you're living and in the challenges in which you're living. And those challenges can be life transformative. And the way we approach this, and we're going to hear one unbelievable issue in about 30 seconds, really can cement a community, because we have in this, just looking around here, in your congregation for this generation, there is this huge untapped reservoir of life experience. I call it spiritual capital. We do not do a good enough job of spending that capital. And in the next 20 to 30 years, as you guys were talking about it, we have unbelievably unique opportunities to be extremely creative. Julie Lampert and Catherine Fishu, thank you very much. We're going to turn the microphone over to our next two participants here. They're going to give us a little bit of a different take, both programmatically and spiritually, I think, on exactly what we're talking about. So, Michael, Rabbi, we want to welcome Rabbi Laura Geller, who is the Rabbi Emerita of Temple Emmanuel in Beverly Hills, California. And she's going to talk to us about an amazing program called High Village LA, which she is quarterbacked, if you could allow me, one sports image. And Dr. Michael Friedman, member of the North American Board, consultant and coach, Congregational Network member, North American Board member, also from Philadelphia, former regional activist leader when we had regions in the old Pennsylvania Council of blessed memory. First of all, your family, your home, everybody safe?
Yes. Although my daughter-in-law's mother lives in Ventura, and lost her entire house. So
we're recording this because this is going to be replayed on Jewish Sacred Aging Radio later on. But we're recording this on December the 8th, and the wildfires in California are a real challenge because those of us who have friends and family there, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge.
Thanks.
So I'm glad you're okay. Rabbi Geller, Chai Village, L.A. What is it, and how did you get involved with it?
So about 4 years ago at Temple Emmanuel, we began to pay attention to all of these kinds of issues, and we instituted a listening campaign where we spoke in small groups in people's homes with about 200 congregants between the ages of 60 and middle 70s. And we asked them to reflect on three questions. The first was, is this a new stage of your life? What keeps you up at night? What gets you up in the morning? The second question was, has the Jewish community been there for you in any meaningful way at this stage? What would it look like if it were? And then the third question was, what kinds of changes do you want in your larger community that would help you enrich this stage of your life? All these conversations were recorded. There was a scribe who wrote everything down. And after we completed the campaign, leaders that had emerged in these discussions went through all of the quotes and discerned four different themes. The first was issues of spirituality. The second, the real need that people of this age cohort has to give back. The third were concerns about people they love themselves and people they love for the future. And the fourth was community. What kind of communities do we need to be cultivating now in order to age gracefully? The fears that emerged, the primary fears, were the fear of isolation, the fear of becoming invisible, and the fear of becoming dependent. So then research groups looked at all of these different themes, and the one that I'm going to talk about is the theme of community, building communities. The research led people to discover the village movement. The first village began in 2002, right here in Boston in Beacon Hill, when neighbors got together to figure out how they could age in the homes that they loved. Turns out that most people in this age cohort want to age in place. There are now over 200 villages around the country. There are 150 more in formation. There's a network that links them together called Village to Village. A village is a membership-driven, self-governing, grassroots virtual community. It's not a social service agency, but it's the idea of creating in your neighborhood a sense of neighbors helping neighbors through services like walking the dog when someone's out of town, bringing meals when someone's sick, providing transportation to medical appointments, assisting with technology. It turns out, to our surprise, that there was no synagogue-based village. All of these are just neighborhoods that get together. Sometimes they hire staff, sometimes it's volunteer. Most often there are membership dues. Average around the country is like $750 or $800 a year. Research by the AARP has shown that village members experience reduced isolation, increased independence, and a deeper sense of purpose. So seems like a no-brainer for something that a synagogue would want to do. And so we decided to create this synagogue-based village. We went to the Jewish Community Foundation in Los Angeles and asked for a grant. And in their wisdom, they said, we don't give money to synagogues alone. You have to find partners. So we reached out to other synagogues, and now we have a partnership with Temple Isaiah. Temple Emmanuel and Temple Isaiah, both Reform synagogues, both very similar in very many ways, competitors. All of my career as a senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel, we were in quote-unquote competition with the other good Reform synagogues in Los Angeles. And the notion that now we're partners is in itself an extraordinary transformation of the American Jewish community. We got the grant. And after a year of planning and identifying leaders, clarifying goals, and articulating Jewish values that underline the community, High Village was launched in 2016. Now there are 214 members. There have been more than 200 member-generated programs that have been held most often in members' homes, and over 150 services provided to people who want them. So the problem with this is you need to pay membership dues. But we made a decision that since this is a synagogue-based program, you had to be a member of either of the two temples in order to belong to the village. And so because you're paying hefty synagogue dues, we kept membership dues in the village very low. So it's $100 a person or $150 a household. You cannot be a part of the village unless you are a member of the synagogue. To our surprise, people are joining our synagogues because they want to be part of the village. And so it has turned out to be an incredible win-win for both the synagogue and the village. The synagogues offer in-kind services. We are technically a program of Temple Emmanuel of Beverly Hills, so all the back room stuff is done by our synagogue. We're covered by the insurance for the village is, in fact, insurance for the synagogue. We've opened a lot of synagogue programs to village members, which means that now Temple Isaiah congregants are studying with the rabbis at Temple Emmanuel and vice versa. This is stuff that wouldn't have happened before. Now it's happening in such a natural way that it's just enriched all of our lives in ways that we couldn't have predicted. The synagogue is growing because of it. We initially thought that people would join the village because they would want services. You know, I can stay in my house. My kids don't live in LA. I can stay in my house until I'm too old to climb up a ladder or too frail to climb up a ladder and change a light bulb. That's when I have to move to the next level, unless there's somebody who's going to come into my house and change my light bulb. It turns out that people, there are two generations in the village. There are people who are roughly between the ages of 60 and kind of healthy mid-70s, some healthy mid-80s, and then there are people who are more frail. The people who are more healthy, it turns out they don't want the services, although they do want to offer the services. What they really want is friends. Who knew that me, Rabbi Laura Geller of Temple Emmanuel, who was always so busy when I was a full-time worker, you know, friendships change as you grow older. The people that were your friends when your kids were little, you know, the social capital that has been created by this village, all these different programs, a member decides, I want to go for a walk once a week, and so there's a walking group, there's a backyard gardening group, there's a salon series, there's a, people offer classes in each other's homes. Friendships are created that didn't exist before. And it turns out that those fears, the fear of being invisible, the fear of being isolated, that this village responds to that. People are no longer afraid of being invisible, they're no longer afraid of being isolated, and they've come to learn, we've all come to learn, that nobody really ever was independent. We are all interdependent, and that's what the village has led to, and it's still growing, and who knows where it's going to lead, but it has been an incredibly, in my years of being a rabbi, I have never seen the kind of energy that is not starting from the synagogue. We're not programming for people. This is all coming from the community themselves, and it's really been kind of magical and transformative.
So Rabbi Geller talks about, you talk about this, these fears. As we've gone around the country, and we do a lot of work in congregations, we found similar types of reactions from boomers in our conversations of, we're afraid of three things. One, of growing older in pain and suffering. Two, some of you may have done with this in your family, there's a fear of outliving our money. And given the economics of aging in the United States, that's a real fear. And three, as Rabbi Geller was talking about, we're afraid as we grow older of being alone. So Dr. Friedman, you're a therapist. You see people in a variety of different ways. You're hugely active in the Union for Reform Judaism. What, in your experience, just piggybacking on what Laura Geller said and this fear of isolation, how powerful is this in what you've seen in your practice? And how is this fear a camouflage, and that's probably the wrong word, for the ultimate fear as we get older, the reality of our own mortality and the understanding that our time is limited?
So let me respond by saying more from my personal experience and my synagogue and community experience than necessarily my clinical case.
It's probably, you know, more valuable.
I think I think there's more concern today about the fear of isolation, of being alone, than there is the fear of death. Those of us, and I'm looking here around the room, we're a biased sample. We're very fortunate people. We're middle class, upper middle class people. We have access. We have had access in our lives to excellent medical care and good health. We have reason to believe that we're going to live a long time. Now, yes, granted, some of us had bad luck and inherited some bad genes, and some of us, unfortunately, are going to get hit by that proverbial bus crossing a street. But we take those things off the table. We're going to live a lot longer, and some of us definitely longer than our parents, and absolutely definitely longer than our grandparents. So what are we going to do with that time? And how do we have meaning in our lives? I think that's the issue. It's more is only desirable if it has quality. And I think that's what I was reacting to as I was hearing Rabbi Geller.
Yeah, I think as we teach in the Jewish sacred aging when we go out, the spiritual question. Look, if you transition out of full-time work, if you choose to do that, at 68 or 70, which is not unusual anymore, given the wild cards of health and time, you can expect to live another 25, 30 years. So the spiritual question that lies at the heart of all these conversations is, what do we do with the time that we have left, knowing that we cannot control that time? So that's really the spiritual question at the heart of all these conversations. And when I would submit to you that when you strip away all the programmatic analytics, that's the name of the game. The name of the game.
And I think that in addition to programs like The Village, I think, you know, again, we're in a room of synagogue leaders. Synagogues can help be a vehicle to fill that void. We can't be guaranteed about how long we're going to live. But we do know that relationships are life enhancing at every stage of life, and that's the real concern and the real opportunity, more so than our financial resources.
Oh, absolutely.
It's that piece of being connected.
So I actually think it's a mistake to think about this in terms of programs. This is a different way of thinking about engagement. what we're talking about is creating the opportunities for connection. That's not a program. High Village, I would argue, is not a program. One of the things that I have learned in my some years now of thinking about these kinds of issues is the bottom line is everybody needs a minion. Not necessarily a minion where you go to pray, although some of us do need that. But you need a minion. You need those nine other people that are going to be there for you no matter what happens. So how do we create the opportunity for those kinds of connections so that you know that when you need your minion, they'll be there for you and you are part of a minion? The other thing that is emerging that we're still struggling with, but I think is really critical, is that this is an opportunity for exploring intergenerational spaces, because it turns out that millennials need the same things that we need, and we can really be connected to each other in meaningful ways. I think there's a lot of work to be done around thinking differently about grandparenting. My grandchildren live in Portland, Oregon, but I still have a need to be around little kids. And the synagogue is still one of the only intergenerational institutions that still exists in our public space, you know, the third space where we actually do interact with people of different ages. The rich possibilities of really thinking about that kind of connection, I think, is huge. Mark Friedman, who is going to be keynoting our program on Sunday, after he created Encore.org, and I recommend everybody go to the website and check it out, imagined what it would look like if a million boomers were engaged with young people in any way imaginable, how that could really change the country in terms of, you know, particularly if this is volunteer, you know, you couldn't pay for that kind of experience, wisdom, whatever, and all the data about young people who are connected to older people and how much better they do in all kinds of metrics. But it's a, you know, for both generations. So we're in a unique position to be exploring those kinds of possibilities, not through creating programs, but through creating connections.
Yeah. Michael?
I just wanted to add a point to what you were saying, Laura. When I think about connections and community, particularly when we're talking about those of us who are aging, we often think about our concern about receiving support and services. What we sometimes forget how enriching it is to give of ourselves. And that's another piece that is often lacking when we're in isolation, that we get cheated out of that opportunity, which is really life enhancing.
You know, one of the things we're seeing with the boomers, and I know Friedman will talk about it on Sunday, is this huge propensity on the part of boomers to what I call the give back syndrome. We're looking for things to give back, not stuffing envelopes in the synagogue office, but really meaningful types of giving back to the society. And, you know, Laura mentioned the grandparenting thing. The boomers have really reinvented grandparenting. And many of us who are blessed to be in that club are very active in grandparenting. We you know, in the media we have this thing called sandwich generation. Being from Jersey, from South Jersey, we call it the club sandwich generation. Only because, and I guarantee you, some of you, and either here in the room or those of you who are listening, know that multi-generational caregiving is no longer an anathema, it's a reality. And the AARP has just come out with another caregiving study. You know, about 20% of the people who are engaged in regular caregiving are millennials, people between 18 and 32. So the world is changing. There's great opportunities for, just as we're hearing today, very creative responses belonging in the synagogue, because when push comes to shove, it is still the synagogue that is the major institution within the Jewish community. I have to ask you, Laura, before we start running out of time, because this has been up, Chai Village has been up for a couple of years. How transformative has it been for some of the people? Have you seen a real transformation?
So there actually was a little survey that we did, and we asked people whether they reported that they felt closer to their synagogue since joining the Village, and 63% of the people reported that the answer was yes. A couple of responses before I actually respond to your question. One is, I think that synagogues are going to look different 15 years from now, right? Already, Temple Emmanuel and Temple Isaiah look different because we're collaborating together. There was an earlier session today about end-of-life projects and how different synagogues are working together. The wonderful work that Linda Thal and Rabbi Rachel Cowan did with Wise Aging, a book that all of you should read. There are Wise Aging groups now in many different synagogues and in communities, so that the synagogue as separate standalone institutions that don't interact with each other, I think, is going to be transformed as we move forward. I personally think that that's actually a good thing. I said that our village is built on Jewish values. You can go to highvillagela.org, look at our website, click through it, you'll see that the Jewish values, one of the Jewish values, relates to Tikkun Olam. And so in order to be a part of the Village, you not only pay your $100 or your $150, but there is an expectation that you do 4 hours of service a month. The service could be taking somebody to the doctor, or it could be changing somebody's light bulb, or it could be working in the office, or it could be volunteering at your synagogue. So the synagogue love this because whoever has enough people for the Purim Carnival or to be Shabbos greeters or whatever. So again, win-win. But we also are exploring the notion that a lot of the folks in the Village are already active in the community. They're volunteering in literacy programs. They're volunteering in whatever. They often do this as individual people. They have the relationship with the kid that they're tutoring. What we're trying to do is to encourage that kind of service also to count for those 4 hours, and then to bring people together in groups to talk about what that experience was like. So everything that we're doing leads to building community. And the other thing that we learn about the frail old age cohort is they want to give back too. And anybody can make a phone call once a week to somebody to check in on them, even if they can't leave their house. And so we're exploring ways that everyone can still feel that sense of purpose and meaning with whatever the quality of their life is. Mark Friedman said, and probably will say again on Sunday, we think about leaving a legacy, but the real work of this stage of our life is living our legacy, and to creating opportunities for people to do that. This village is one example. It's not going to work in every city, you know. So I'm not recommending it as something that everybody do, but exploring ways to deepen connections, I think, is what the challenge is now to us as a Jewish community.
So, Laura, you mentioned the idea of legacy, and as we get a little older, that becomes even more crucial. It's been my experience that in working with the program of Jewish Sacred Aging, that everyone, there's a point in their lives, and sometimes it's repressed, and maybe Michael can respond to this, is a point in our lives when we understand that the acquisition of material things ends. We don't need any more stuff. But what we really start and want to acquire is, what is it that we want my grandchildren and children to take of me when I know that I cannot go where they're going to go, no matter how hard I pray? And this transitional moment, I think it happens to different people at different stages in their life, and some people repress it, okay? This concept of legacy, Michael, when you see people in your office and also from your own, as you were alluding to before, personal experience, how powerful is that? Does it change people?
Definitely. I think what we're dealing with, again, meaning in life. And, you know, at some point, again, having more stuff, having leaving a bigger financial inheritance, fails on the meaning scale. I think that one of the things that, our generation have had the good fortune to be able to do is because we're living longer and because we have the means to have the time, we are engaging with our grandchildren, for many of us, in ways that are much richer than the way we engaged with our own children. And so, you know, for some folks, we talk about, I wish I could have ... Well, now we can. Mm-hmm. And that's the legacy that we leave, legacy of meaning, modeling the behaviors. The example that Laura mentioned of volunteering, I mean, that is such a strong value that gets transmitted mostly by example. And so this is an opportunity for us not only to enhance this last phase of our lives, but to enhance it and give a gift to society by helping really influence the next generation.
And also by doing that, giving a gift to ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, we have about 30 seconds. Well, it's rabbinic 30 seconds. So it's... why are you laughing? Seriously. I want to make sure that we mention Laura's book, Getting Good at Getting Older, A Jewish Catalog for a New Age, coming out when?
In next fall.
Of 18. Right. 18, published by?
Behrman House.
Okay.
Written with my husband, Richard Siegel, who wrote The Jewish Catalog. Some of you remember it from the late 70s.
This group will remember the Jewish Catalog.
Exactly. Well, the point is we were boomers then, and we're boomers now. And so I want to take 15 rabbinic seconds of the last 30 and to remind us that we're not just talking about us boomers, large and influential and as important as we are. What we're really talking about is redefining a vision of a life. One day, those millennials that are talked about a lot here at the biennial, they'll be between 50 and 70. And the question that we need to think about in all of what we're doing is how will America's workplaces, universities, cities, public policy, and religious institutions have changed to harness the energy and talent of people in this age cohort? You know, there's a lot of talk about conflict, generational conflict, kids versus canes, is how it's sometimes put. But what we're about is trying to reframe a vision where intergenerational collaboration is not only possible, but it's desirable, it's essential. And for us to think about how we use the resources of human capital in the older population to strengthen connections with younger people and to make a difference in the world. This is really important work, and it's not just about us. We are actually talking about transforming society. You know, there was once a civil rights movement. There was once a women's movement. This has the possibility to be that kind of transformational movement if we pay attention and recognize that we're in this together, and it's about us, but it's about changing the world.
And ladies and gentlemen, for those of you in the room, and also listening, I hope you remember that throughout all these conversations with our four guests, the importance of the power of the synagogue is a constant. And we don't have to wait 15 or 20 years for the changes. Instead, all of us live in cities where we see the emerging trends. And as I would say to congregational leadership, if you continue to do the same thing that you've always done, you will be irrelevant within a generation. And the reality is, it's going to take less than a generation. So I want to thank Catherine Fisher and Michael Friedman and Julie Lampert and Rabbi Laura Geller. I want to appreciate you, and we have people in there, so for those of you who are listening, please extend your thanks with a round of applause for these people. To Roseanne Selfon, our hostess here at this session of the Biennial. I want to thank all of you for listening on the podcast here at the URJ, the Union for Reformed Judaism. This podcast will be placed, archived on Jewish Sacred Aging, the Jewish Sacred Aging radio show. internet radio show every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, blogtalkradio.com/Jewish Sacred Aging. And then we invite you to visit JewishSacredAging.com for the podcast and for a whole host of other resources that are geared to this generation and what we've been talking about all day. To all of you here, to those of you listening, thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you and once more at another edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. Toda Rabbah. Shalom. Yes, we have, ladies and gentlemen, we have some time. We're off the podcast, so you got to turn this way. So it's off. Before you leave, as you rush out to the next thing, these are some JewishSacredAging.com cards to get you to the website. Can we take, I don't know the schedule, the next, when's the next session to
get? We have the
315, great. Some of you may have some questions. Let's take that now, okay? And oh, announcement.
I just want to let everyone know. Can you hear me? Okay. Tons of resources around the Boomer engagement, around all of this work of sacred aging and the High Village and the work that our Baby Boomer COP has done, which isn't just baby boomers. It really is, I think, engagement. As Stuart Himmelfarb says, if we get it right now, we're going to get it right for a lot of generations. And that's really the work that we're talking about can be found in the tent. I'm going to tell you where it is. I know for some people that it's easy to get to and others we can help you. But in the tent, which is our online collaborative group, community for the URJ. If you look up baby boomers, there's a group now. We've made it public. So everything our COP has done around village work and everything I spoke about, all the resources, they are all in there. How to do a listening campaign, how, you know, more about the village movement, encore.org, everything. It's in there. And I'm happy to speak to anybody who has questions about it or wants resources. And just look for more information after the biennial around sort of what the URJ, what we're going to do around mobilizing this work and opportunities. I'm going to leave my cards up here too.
What is your name?
Julie Lambert. JLambert@URJ.org. And I'm not in Manhattan, so I get lots of emails around, would you like to have a cup of coffee? I live in Miami, so I can't meet you at 6:33, but
okay. And just before we end, Richie's is going to take your questions now. Rabbi Address, I just want to say on behalf of all of us who are baby boomers, that the work that you are doing is changing lives and it's enriching lives. And there are so many of us who just want to say thank you.
Thank you. And it's just really kind of cool to... questions. Anybody have questions? Yes, ma'am.
I don't have a question. No? I want to tell you some of the things I do. I'm 86 years young. This is just for show right now. It's my third leg here. I didn't feel old until I came here because there's too damn much walking. Okay, so anyway, here's some of the things I do. I sing karaoke 1 or 2 nights a week. I play the tambourine in my temple rock band. I'm a docent in an art museum in my town. I'm on the environmental commission in my town, and I do Torah study, and the Renaissance group in my temple, and when I travel, I take some of my grandchildren with me.
What temple are you from?
Temple Sinai in Tenafly.
Up on the other side of Jersey.
Yeah. Well, we're right with
you. You're North Jersey. You're North Jersey. Yeah, I live in South Jersey. Yeah. What exit? We'll talk Jersey. What
exit?
Exit 2.
I am. I've been closer, right.
Oh, you're all the way up, because Exit 2 is by me.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, down by Philly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're a Yankee fan,
Palisades
by the way.
Palisades Park, but I used to be a Cleveland Indian fan.
Other questions? Yes, ma'am. And nice, stand up nice and loud, because when mics are off, tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Paula Globerman, and I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Hey.
And for those who are geographically challenged, it's Montana, go way north.
An Oiler fan.
And an Oiler fan, and we just won't talk about that.
Okay.
our challenge is that we're a small congregation.
Right.
We're 110 families now strong, which for us is enormous. And we finally have a full-time rabbi, but for years we work under lay leadership. And we have a part-time office person. So we haven't got staff. And we haven't got the same kind of wonderful resources that a lot of you have. We also don't have another Reformed temple next door. The closest one is Calgary, and that's 350 kilometers in the Canadian winter, which is a legitimate issue. And so my question to the URJ, and my question to all of you, and we're lucky because we have a lot of millennials who want to take over our congregation, and we are gracefully, thank God, plowing out. But that doesn't stop the need to contribute. It doesn't stop the need to connect and be interconnected. But what we find is we are way up here, and you are all here. So we need a mechanism. It's wonderful if you have a big congregation, if you have 1,000 families, just 5,000 Jews in Edmonton. There isn't, with all the synagogues, there isn't 1,000 families. So my question to you is, how do we engage baby boomers and interconnect, and how do we build our village in a small micro situations.
One of the things, because most 50% of the congregations in the Reform movement are not big congregations. 50% of the congregations in the URJ are under 250 member units. I know this, and I haven't worked for the URJ since 2011 when I went to work for that young lady over there. That is a continuing fact, because I talked to the people, Mary, and we were just talking about Mary Legate the other day. You are not alone. I've been to Edmonton when I used to work for the union. Arthur Grant, of blessed memory, once sent me on a speaking tour to Calgary and Edmonton. And I remember going to Edmonton, they took me to the mall. It was the highlight of, they kept telling me this. After, you are not alone. Okay, so we in Jewish Segregation have consulted with congregations all over the world, small congregations. A lot of times we'll use this. A lot of times we'll use Zoom. You're not alone. I've been to many small congregations to sit with them and actually learn and work with them. And there is no substitute. We had this conversation many times, of actually going to a congregation, sitting with them over a weekend, learning who they are, eating with them, praying with them, and really understanding that. But you're a member of the movement. I'm going to ask Julie to respond, because she can talk to you about it from the Reform Movement perspective. After this, if you want to talk about how we can help you, I'd be more than happy to do that. Go ahead, Julie.
We're aware of that need for us to be the convening of that. One of the things I would suggest is we have our knowledge network. There's a phone number. I don't have the thing with this. But if you were to call and say, we're interested in this multi-generational engagement with boomers, the knowledge network would actually send you to me, because they know that that's sort of what my portfolio is. The other thing I would suggest is that to be looking out and to be involved in the tent and the online community, which is connecting everybody, because that's where we put a lot of announcements of opportunities for engagement. So, for example, after this biennial, if we do, or whatever comes out of the next phases or the next iterations or the next initiatives we launch around the engagement and the boomers and all of that, the tent is going to be a place where those announcements and opportunities for engagement are going to come out on URJ.org. But that we're going to message that through an online, for exactly the purpose is that that's how we're going to connect with you. But I would encourage you, if this is really something that you'd like some guidance and support around, reach out to me. I'll be happy to do that. And we, and again, the Knowledge Network, that number, and if you go down to URG Central, you'll get a little thing. And the Knowledge Network, that is a very sophisticated system where you call, you give them the specific question you have, concern, challenge, opportunity, whatever it is. They have a very sophisticated system of all of us that are supporting different areas, topic areas, regions, whatever it can be, that they will funnel you to the right person. So it's there.
Rabbi Geller, we're going to run out of time, so we're going to try to take everybody real, and we'll be
so
a little
again,
flexible.
The village is a village. It's not for every community. It's a model. But a good synagogue, really, a synagogue the size of your synagogue, in its own way, could be a village. As you see each other as being responsible, your portfolio committee or whatever, to expand it, you know, the way we got our The perimeter of our village, we drew a big circle around essentially West Los Angeles. Why? What's the limit? How far would I drive to bring soup to somebody who's sick? That is the actual, you know, all the people that live within that neighborhood. So that could be your, you could imagine, you know, thinking about relationships as opposed to programs in the synagogue. But one other thing that I found is pretty interesting, and that is, I don't know about you, but when I was a young, when I was a young person, there was a generation gap between me and my parents. Not that I didn't love them, but there's a lot I didn't tell them. This generation of millennials are not separated in the same way from their parents. There's not this connection. And it turns out that millennials actually want connections with older people. We have experience. I'm a part of a project that Trick Tippett is running on eldering, where young millennials want to be connected to older people because we have certain kinds of experience. What would that look like in your synagogue? There's some young woman in your synagogue who just had a miscarriage who probably could talk to some older woman in the congregation who once had a miscarriage and lived through it. If you knew about it, what if when we people joined our synagogue, we asked them, what is your life experience that you would be willing to share with somebody else? Could we network? You know, it has lots of great possibilities for creating relationships that really will make a difference.
In the old days of the department and caring community, because all the caring community stuff started with our department, I actually have it still in my files because I do a lot of caring community consulting. A colleague created this human resources index. This is 25 years ago. And really, it's exactly what I have it in my file. I used to teach it. And now it can be computerized. You can do this if, as we've said, if the will is there, it can be done. We'll be more than happy to help you. Yes, sir, you had your hand up first. You are?
Flores Barcelona.
From?
Former student here.
Uh-oh.
Mount Vernon, New York, Westchester. Small congregation, 150 families, and we're not isolated in the same way. It can feel isolating when you're in a big Westchester county and we're not similar to everybody else, but by observation, and you pointed out your work with caring community, I would also suggest, and my question is pointed to Laura, is that the village concept to me sounds a little bit what sisterhood and brotherhood in its heydays used to create in terms of relationships, not in terms of programs, but the concept of what it did. And I'm wondering, given that I'm also in a small congregation, are there some of those transferable elements of the opportunities that the village model suggests that can be transferred in other situations? And have you thought about it that way, that you could be helpful in that way? I mean, the example you gave about everybody doing something to help another person or having a minion. Are there other examples of those kind of things that you think are transferable, whether you create that whole village structure or not?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've all learned from Ron Wilson that it's about relationships, it's not about programs, and so any way that you can deepen those kinds of relationships, you know, looks like Women of Reformed Judaism is having a renaissance now. You know, there was a time when it didn't. I mean, you know, it's part of us is just kind of listening to what each other want and then seeing how it works in each of our synagogues. But again, if we focus on building a community that will last over time. What's interesting about this age cohort, as you know, we learned from our colleague here, is as we deal with issues of meaning and purpose, there's a lot of issues of meaning and purpose that can be addressed through people in a sacred community because these are sacred questions. So yes, the answer is yes.
I want to be respectful of our time because it's about 3:15. Can we do one more question? Are you all right with that? Okay. Yes, ma'am. Nice and loud.
My name is Audrey Lichter. I'd like to offer another paradigm. I'm the executive director of a program called Chai Mitzvah. And when we started in 2009, we would get no funding unless we worked with teens or young adults. We were a program that was designed for baby boomers and up, people 40 and up. Last year, we had three groups from 90 to 102 in three independent living facilities. I want to say that sometimes it is about a program that encourages networking. So I encourage you to look us up because we are a vehicle to create collaborative small Hebrew communities that then support each other as they go through their stages. Our mission was, how do we keep people connected throughout their lives? Because we acknowledge, in the organized Jewish community and the funders especially, we're not interested in the fact that if you are 40 and up, that you have spiritual and psychological and emotional needs to stay connected to Judaism all through your life. Sylvia at 95 was setting all kinds of personal goals for her Jewish future. So I'd like to offer that as a paradigm.
So it's a good Chai Mitzvah. You have a booth downstairs in the Shuk, right? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here's the thing. Congregation, be seated. You know that's part of the game. I have colleagues that who shall be nameless. You know, when the end gets boring on the Bima, congregation, please rise. Congregation, sit down. Right. Try that sometime. Up, down, up, down. That's why the yoga, that's Jewish yoga, you know. Rabbinic yoga, we have the crouching rabbi position, blessing position, thinking position. One of the things, can never lose your sense of humor. Being from Philly, we need it. One of the things you need to remember, from you've experienced several programmatic ideas and approaches all geared to this generation and the emerging approach to intergenerational or, as Julie was saying, to de-silo a lot of the situations with congregations. We are at the beginning of a major creative thrust here. Please take this, and above all, when you go back to your board and you sit down and you talk about this and somebody raises their hand, this happens in some of my congregations, okay? Not yours. And says, well, you know, we don't have the money. We can't do it. Say, time out. Illegal use of Narshkite. You do not need a ton of money. You need creativity. And you need the will to take a look at your synagogue and say, this is a moment of great transformation. There is a wealth of resources out there that we can tap into, take them, and adapt them to our particular environment, whether we're 150 people in Edmonton or close to New York City or wherever. If you wish to do it, you can do it. We're here to help you from a variety of different perspectives. The cards are on the table. Some of us will hang around. Thank you very, very much. Have a great biennial. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you all for being part of today's podcast and broadcast on Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. These shows are going to be archived, as we know, as podcast on JewishSacredAging.com. We invite you again your comments to rabbiaddress@JewishSacredAging.com. And please like the Jewish Sacred Aging Radio Facebook page where we also discuss the upcoming shows. Again, these shows are produced at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, under the control of our producer, Steve Lubetkin.
Thank you for listening. We look forward to greeting you again on the next edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you. I'm your host, Richard Adrett.